Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio for the Investor Resources radio program. And if you want to talk to us in this hour, the magic phone number is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And as far as the calendar is concerned, radio time in our world, we're halfway through the month. So that means it's half a month away for the next webinar, which is March 4th, first Saturday of the month, 8:30 in the morning. And we'll be taking another look at what on earth is going on Wall Street and various markets around the world. You can register at irradio.com, irradio.com. And today's access on the air, live here in Puget Sound area, is 800-465-8770. But if you're listening out of the area, that number works also. I mean, last week we had a caller from Kinney, Texas. Anyway, one of the things that's in the news, which is going to be in the news for some time, that may or may not be a market driver, is that the United States of America is on the verge of defaulting on its debt, and that will be the end of the world.
Again,
now, we have seen this story before. And I think the fear factor is dissipating.
Yeah, but it always seems to get taken care of, doesn't it?
That's right. One of the issues that's associated with that is the need to restructure Social Security. It is the third rail of politics, which nobody who is in elected office wants to touch. But it is an issue that is going to continue to plague Western society, because Western societies have pension plans of some sort for the elderly, and the elderly are becoming increasingly populous. My dad died a number of years ago, but he lived with us for a while before he went into the VA facility for his final care. He would always say, "I'm not old. Old is older than I am."
Yeah. It's a good rule. There you go. Yeah.
That is kind of the rule of the world right now. And the example that we have had for decades of how to deal with this is Japan, because Japan had a baby crash post-World War II. I mean, they had to rebuild the country, and they realized children are expensive and we have to rebuild the country. We really can't afford both. So, you know, let's rebuild our country so that those who are still alive and the babies we have some place to live and prosper. And they did that. And their birth rate, like other Western societies post-war, had this roaring number of new babies. And then with the change in policy, it stopped. And so they have a plethora of elderly people and a very small young population. Social retirement programs are based on they're predicated on the basis that you have a young working generation that is larger than your retiring generation, so that the cost of supporting the elderly is minimal, spread across the big base. So if you graph out your demographics, the elderly at the top of the pyramid is a small group. And as you get into younger generations, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the costs get spread among more and more and more, until the population says, we don't want to have any babies.
That's the way it's supposed to work. Yeah. It's just not heading that direction right now. And boy, that like you said, Don, that's how the bills get paid. That's how that works. And when the generation that's retired outnumbers the generation that's still working, doesn't work anymore. Things don't balance out. And that's going to be a huge challenge for everyone on Earth.
Yeah, it's not just here in the United States. Japan's been dealing with it since 1989, when their demographic curve just started flipping upside down. China has a massive problem because of their one-child policy. They just they didn't say this because they didn't think it through. We are going to eliminate our future working generations by not having kids. And we find here at times people decide we're just not going to have any kids. So as they get older, they have no kids or grandchildren to come in and help them transition into the elderly years where they need some help but don't need to be in an institution, and family steps in and they have no family.
Nobody's there.
That's a big problem. So countries are beginning to adapt to this. I mean, it's belated. I mean, because I said we've had Japan to watch and see them make mistakes. How do you handle this? Can we get better at it? But in Japan, where they call railway cars carriages, when they pull into a station, they've now made the distance between the car and the platform very, very tight. So elderly people who often don't pick their feet up real well, don't get trapped in that gap in between the car and the platform. And in southern France, they're dealing with Alzheimer's, and they actually have village stores near Alzheimer's facilities. They don't have price labels because they found that it confuses the patron. And the government picks up the grocery bill. So I'm sure it's limited offerings about what they're going to do and stuff, but it gives some sense of independence. They can go into the grocery store and buy something on their own. And they're doing some other similar stuff in New Zealand. What we just haven't done is figured out how we're going to solve this problem. And nobody wants anybody who hears your Social Security benefits going to be cut. Well, The whole system can be saved if we get some cooperation on both sides of the aisle, which right now doesn't look very promising.
not sure how that would happen these days. That's right.
But the Social Security Administration itself says, from a balance sheet standpoint, in 10 years, we're out of money. Now, they're not totally out of money, but they can't keep paying out the current benefits to everybody as they cross age 65 or whatever. The retirement age, full retirement age, needs to be pushed up because people are living longer.
Way longer.
When this system was created, most people were dead at 65, which happens to be when you became eligible to receive your benefits.
Which worked out well on the payout side, right? But that's no longer true with everyone. The fastest growing age cohort in America is 100-year-olds. It's not the largest, but it's the fastest growing. There's a whole lot of people waking up on their 100th birthday going, wow, I didn't think I was going to still be here, but they are.
Well, the show that's right before us, longevity, the people that are listening to them, and certainly those of us who use them as medical supplement for our care, which I'm one of them. We don't do that because we want to die young.
Correct.
We want more years in our future for whatever our reasons are. So this becomes a financial problem that has to be solved. Social Security has to be changed. The retirement age has to be higher. Benefits probably need to be tied to total income in the household rather than just saying, oh, you're 72, you get this annuity for the rest of your life. And we have to really identify, for people who do not understand, you don't have a bank account at Social Security. What you have is a claim on your grandchildren's income.
It's just a transfer payment. Yep. From the people who are working to the people who aren't. And it's like you said, Don, it's not on account. It's transferred as required. And with more and more and more, you know, 10,000 baby boomers a day still turning 65, that's a huge burden that's going to just continue to increase, and not enough people working to pay that bill indefinitely. So, like I said, it's got to change. And it's doable, but like you also said, Don, that's the third rail of politics, and nobody wants to go there. So it's not going to happen until there's a crisis, of course. You know, they're not going to fix it until it's really on fire. So they'll put it off as long as they can.
Yeah, that happened in the UK this last year. It was just a few months ago that the bond market in the UK just collapsed. And it was because they figured out that the national pension plan investments just weren't adequate, and government couldn't afford to fund it. It was a real problem for them to figure out how to balance stuff out so that their bond market could begin to function again. And they did, but it really brought to the forefront, at least in the financial markets, that the major pension plans, and it's not just government pension plan, but it's anybody, almost anybody, corporation that has a pension plan, a defined benefit pension plan, not your 401k, that they're in financial trouble. They don't have enough assets. They haven't put away enough money to fund everybody who's retired. And so they're just continually scraping the bucket to try to find an answer. And those answers are hard to come by without raising taxes. And there's no politician who wants to raise taxes to put it in a pension plan. And the state of Illinois has had pension plans go broke, and a number of teachers' plans over in the prior to the 08 market collapse went out of business. They ran out of money because they wouldn't address the financial problem that was staring them in the face. And that's right ahead of us. And we'll not address this subject after we come back from this break. We got other things that are a little more pleasant to talk about.
That's enough. That's enough of that. Right.
That's enough.
We would like to, we'd like to remind everyone we have our next market update on the calendar. That's scheduled for Saturday, March 4th. 8:30 in the morning. You can register for that by going to IRIRadio.com. That's IRIRadio.com. Just head to the webinar page and click the registration link. You're going to get an email back, and there's a link in there. And on March 4th, you just click that link. You'll be live online with us. We can show you the charts we're looking at. We're going to take a good look at the economy, what's going on with the markets. We always let you know what we're doing with client portfolios. And we have plenty of time for your questions. So if you have questions about the economy, if you have questions about an individual security you have, should it be in your portfolio or not, it's a good time to get a second opinion on that. Again, you can register for that at IRIRadio.com. If you'd like to talk to us through this morning, we'd love to talk to you. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Hey, well, all right, sir, here we go there, and what are you going to give for them? I've got $600 down here, now $10, and now $25, and now $35, and now the $50, now $60, will you give me $60, now $75, $75, another $85 on the bottom there.
Well, the market is an auction market, and people often have a tendency to forget that. We get excited about different things, and we just assume that whatever we believe is what's going to happen. You're listening to the Investor Resources radio program. This is a live call-in program. You want to talk to us, the number is 800-465-8770. One of the famous people, one famous money manager from the 80s is Peter Lynch. And he has a quote which is used often, and that's, "Everyone in the world is a long-term investor until the market goes down." That's right. I'm supposed to make 9% a year after year after year, because that's the average of the market. But we've talked about this. We've said this before, and we've found out again this last bear market, which may or may not be over yet. It's not quite confirmed.
That's true. Yeah.
But it's basically that investors are inclined to hang on to their losers. They sell their winners and they hang on to their losers because they know they made a good decision. They spent a lot of time researching it and they're convinced that it'll come back when it gets even. Then I'll sell it. And that's, as Peter Lynch says, this is a really good process to be broke. It's if you have a winner, you should be hanging on to it. When you have losers, you need to get rid of them quickly. And Mike in Renton is worried about whether or not his pension might be a loser. So let's talk with Mike for a couple of minutes. You're on the air, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. So I guess you have my question right there. So, yeah, it's a Motorola pension. And last I checked a couple of years ago, I could have cashed out for like $65,000. So I don't know if that's relevant, but.
Well, the cash out is a function of what is the interest rate in the market for pricing the pension. And your pension, are you on the pension right now where you're receiving monthly income?
No, nothing.
Well, with interest rates rising, the discounted present value at a higher interest rate means that your cash out amount is lower because the assumption is with interest rates higher, you can replace that value yourself because you aren't getting a 0.5% interest. You can go out and get 4% interest. So,
okay. Right now I'm getting 6%, but.
If they have a 6% calculation, one of the benefits of a pension plan is that they have very long-term horizons. So they do what's called laddering their bond portfolio. They own a lot of bonds that they've owned a long time at much higher interest rates. And then they own bonds they bought a year ago or two, or in the last decade that have very low interest rates. And you have the benefit of averaging those. And I do not know the shape of their pension plan. They should publish an annual report. They're required to do that. And you could look at that and see that what the trustees say is their unfunded liability, which is we have these pension benefits going to be paid out and we don't have 100% of what we need to cover them. So we have to make it up with contributions and earnings. And you need to take a look at how close they are to being fully funded. Now, a lot of people here in the state of Washington work for the state or are covered under state pension system. And Washington is one of the few states in the country that has virtually no unfunded liability. It's one of the most secure pension systems around. And there are very few states that can say that. There's a couple on the East Coast. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I know that unfunded liability figure has been, kind of looking worse from year to year. So is there some, percentage that I should, be concerned about when it drops?
I would start asking questions if they have more than 15% unfunded. If they've got 85% of it funded, then contributions over time and earnings, particularly now that we have a higher earnings environment, should help offset some of that. But their plan for resolving this is typically a 75-year plan. It's not that they have to resolve it overnight. It's that they need to have a plan to address the issue. And most trustees are working on that. We've had an unusually low interest rate environment for an extended period of time, which has made their job worse, more difficult. But you should be able to send a letter or an email and inquire what is their plan to resolve their unfunded liability and over what period of time. And it's probably over a period of time that's longer than your lifetime. That they have an unfunded liability does not mean the plan's in trouble. But if they aren't addressing it, it will be.
I see. All right. Okay. And just one other quick question. I noticed that sometimes when I search your site, I can find a figure for the AUM. Is that a good barometer of sort of like the health of your outfit or?
No. AUM has nothing to do with the health of the firm. It just happens to be the one day of the year that we were required to report what it was at that time.
Mm.
But so it is a point of interest for regulators, which we must disclose, but it has nothing to do with operation of the company.
Okay. Yeah, I just kind of wondered about that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being out there. Thanks for taking time to call us. Call us back again. We have Jimmy on the line from Seattle. Jimmy, you still there?
Hello.
Go ahead,
yeah,
sir.
I'm still here. Hey, on this Social Security, I know you didn't want to talk about it any further, but you said that in 10 years the government has stated that they won't have any more funds available.
The Social Security Administration, on their record keeping, says they will be out of money in 10 years. They're not going to run out of money, but they're going to run negative. They aren't going to have enough money coming in to cover what's going out. So they'll be living on a credit card. That credit card is taxpayers. And they'll be going to the general fund saying, we need more money to cover these obligations. What they're telling us is Congress needs to get realistic about how Social Security is going to continue for the next several generations.
So my question is, so should I just get my Social Security early rather than wait? You know, like there's that 62 and 67 age group. If they're going to be having problems funding it, they're probably going to cut it or have to do something eventually or raise the age like you're saying. So would it be a good idea just to start taking it out when I'm 62?
Well, to give you specific advice without knowing about anything about your other alternative sources of income, this answer that I'm giving you is generic. As a general rule, you are better off waiting to age 70 to take your Social Security if you can afford to manage your cash flow until age 70. Because for every year that you delay beyond your full retirement age, 67, you get an increase in benefit, which is equivalent to about a tax-free 8% return per year for the rest of your life. And you can't get that from any investment scheme. So the longer you wait, you are going to get paid for it on a risk return basis. And when the day comes that they adjust benefits, the people who are on benefits are going to have, I would expect, are going to have the least impact if they actually have to cut current payouts. And there's a threat to do that, which is a fear-mongering threat, politically driven. So right now I wouldn't do that. Currently, my recommendation would be if you can wait to 70 to take it, the incremental increase rewards you substantially for that. And in addition, assuming that you're the primary wage earner in your household and that you predecease your spouse, when you die, having delayed your benefit to 70, she gets your benefit. I mean, you're actually giving her a bigger survivor's annuity the longer you wait. If you take it early, you are going to penalize her survivor's benefit.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. I like that. And one thing, I like to make one comment. You know, they got millions of people trying to cross the border, and most of them are young, and they could be working. Because I know in my area, a lot of them from Honduras and from El Salvador, they're already working in this area. So, and they all seem to be pretty young people. So why not, I know it's really controversial, but why not allow more people in? And that's the same thing that Japan is not doing. And what I've heard, you know, they don't have hardly any immigration. They got so many old people, and they
That's
need
true.
To have more immigration. So why not yes. do it here when we have people who are who just trying to, you know, get the American dream, you know, and, you know, basically work here. And they and the ones I encounter have been young, in their 20s.
Yeah, they are. And there are a lot of them who are industrious. The issue is, what is their skill level and what are they going to do? If their skill level is minimal, what they actually do is they hold down the minimum wage for everybody who's a natural citizen here. That's problematic. Those who don't get jobs, who can't speak English, who are not conversant in the language, in the customs, in business operations, they turn into welfare recipients, which is a primary reason for bringing them in right now, is you come in here, we're going to take care of you, and remember to vote Democrat. And you end up in many of the sanctuary states where the cost of those immigrants runs $60,000 to $80,000 a year in direct compensation and indirect benefits. And who's paying for that? That is you and me and Perry and a ton of other people who are listening to this show. So that's the offset.
Right, I understand that. But even if it's low-level jobs, they still pay. And if, you know, if they legalize them, they're still paying Social Security.
Assuming they're reporting their income, sir.
Well,
we're up against a break. We've got to take the break, Jimmy. So, yeah. Thanks for calling. Okay, let's take our break, Perry.
Bottom of the hour here. Yep, time to get out of here. I'd like to remind everyone that we have an weekly email newsletter, The Week in Review. If you'd like to start receiving that, all you have to do is send us an email. Send that email to help@irradio.com. That's help@irradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name in the body of the email, and you will begin receiving that on Monday. We take a pretty good look at the week's financial news, let you know what's important, and let you know what you can probably ignore, because there's a lot of economic noise out there, and you don't need to pay attention to all of it. Again, send that email to help@irradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this morning, give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, that's kind of relevant to what we started the last segment with Peter Lynch, whose policy was to hang on to winners and get rid of his losers, which is the opposite of what most investors do, because the strong stocks, the strong companies survive. The weak ones, well, they often get cheaper, and people put more money in, and then they get cheaper, and they add more money, and they get cheaper. And then often they end up facing bankruptcy. And if they are fortunate enough to find some alternative financing avenues, they may get some reprieve, as was the case with Bed Bad & Beyond this last week, which has been on the verge of bankruptcy for, I think, the better part of a year. But the retail investors using social media got involved with Bed Bath & Beyond last year, ran the stock price up, and put some hedge funds into real deep trouble because they were betting on the bankruptcy, which didn't happen. Anyway, the high price, the company decided to sell stock, raise money, and they did, and they needed more. And they found some alternative financing. So they have avoided bankruptcy for now. But that's kind of the problem that investors have, that you look at something that this company shouldn't even be operating, and you think, well, of course it's not going to go out of business because I buy stuff from it. In fact, I heard one of the anchors on a financial show on Bed Bath & Beyond says, oh, yeah, I go to Bed Bath & Beyond all the time. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, keep going right now because they really need you.
they need the help. But that's so many investors, one of their biggest problems. They don't have any sell-side discipline. They don't have a set of rules that say, once these a fund or a company hits these metrics, I'm going to get rid of this thing. People just warehouse stocks. Things go in the portfolio. Nothing ever comes out, and that can really hurt your total return over time. And it also raises the risk in your portfolio. And there's no reason to do that. But that's where a lot of the danger comes from. People just refuse to sell things, and they'll make up reasons for why they should keep them instead of just saying, "Well, that didn't work out, and let's move on." That's the prudent thing to do, and it's just so hard for some people to do.
So there are some alternative ways of our processes. You have to figure out which one you're going to use. Last week, Jan from Olympia called in, disappointed with her manager. And I think if I was going to classify the firm she uses, that they would describe themselves probably as a GARP manager. That's growth at a reasonable price, which means they're looking for companies that are growing their companies and their revenue and their margins, but they don't want to overpay for them. So they're a bit of a value investor. Now, the real strong value investor is a very patient person, because it can take 10 or 20 years for a company that has a really clean balance sheet to be in the right place in the economy to experience growth. Most investors don't want to wait that long, particularly if you're close to or in retirement. So that's a disadvantage to value investing. You're going to buy cheap, get bargain price on your investment, but your return period may be very, very extended. Growth, on the other hand, is looking for quicker return, but often those companies aren't paying dividends, and they're dominating a market for a period of time, but they are priced based on alternative investment from basically it's a discounted cash flow. And if interest rates rise, then the future value of that company that pays no dividend is discounted to a lower number. And we saw that happen all of last year. So if you have a GARP portfolio, growth at a reasonable price, and interest rates are rising, that alone is going to cause some negative impact on those stocks in that portfolio. And then if it multiplies because the economy turns down and the market follows, it's the problems are amplified, and you're waiting for the economy to turn up and interest rates to fall. And the assumption right now is that we're headed into a recession sometime late this year, early next. And when that happens, historically, the Fed has always lowered interest rates. Now, the Fed has said, we aren't lowering interest rates unless inflation goes down. And the news this week, the end of this week, is that the good news of lower inflation from last quarter, they kind of took another look at it and said, you know, it really didn't come down. It continued to go up throughout the quarter. And that's probably the catalyst for this last week's sell-off in the market, is looking at the real inflation numbers instead of the hoped-for inflation numbers. So the likelihood of the Fed lowering interest rates anytime soon has been pushed a little further downstream. And if that's the case, there's not as quite as much optimism in the market. So what do you do? I mean, we use momentum. And momentum basically is trying to capture leadership, identify laggards to get them out of the portfolio, and momentum captures the consensus information, the consensus evaluation of all the investors in that particular security, because there's always people who believe in the future of that security and those who think it doesn't have a future, or at least it doesn't have a future in my portfolio because I need the cash and I can't wait long enough for anything good to happen. So I'll take my money now. So you have buyers and sellers. And if there's more buyers, it goes up. If there's more sellers, it goes down. if there's just a lack of buyers, which is a lot of what we've had this last year, is people have quit putting money into the market because they lost, particularly for the young retail investors, they lost everything they had making irrational bets. And they're just discouraged, and they have to save money to come back in. So we don't see people abandoning the stock market right now. We don't see sellers. We don't see short sellers who are betting on lower prices. What we see is discouraged buyers who are sitting on the sidelines trying to get up their optimism again, I guess you would say. So momentum tracks what's going on.
It gets hard for people to keep stepping up the plate. You know, and after last year when things just kept heading lower, it's hard to say, okay, maybe we've seen this thing bottom out, at least in the near term, and maybe we can put some more cash to work. Some people just can't do it after that. It's psychologically too difficult, and that's one of the things we like about the momentum process and a rules-based portfolio, is that our opinion of what's going on in the market doesn't get into the decision-making process. It's like, hey, if prices are going up, we want to own the things that are going up, and we don't even care what those are. We don't get to decide where the money is going and what is making money out there. If it is, we want to be on that side of the market while it's going up. And when it changes, we'll make a change with it. But that does not allow you to just sit on the sidelines and say, I'm too worried about this. It makes you do things sometimes that are uncomfortable, and that can lead to better returns because you're listening to the market and not wishing the market was doing what you wanted to. You have to react to what's actually going on, and that it helps keep things in balance.
Well, and you end up avoiding the human bias. Just think about the pressure we are under from the administration to buy electric vehicles. And what do electric vehicles need? They need batteries. And what do batteries need? They need a lot of rare earth minerals, the one that's most commonly known as lithium. So with this pressure from the administration at all sorts of levels to eliminate fossil fuels, which isn't going to happen, you would think that there would be an increasing demand for lithium. And in fact, this last week, GM made a major purchase in a battery manufacturer that deals, has resources for lithium. Well, the lithium, there's a lithium exchange traded fund, ticker's LIT. And since its high last December, it's down 29% in a world that looks like it has growing demand for the product.
Go figure, right? There's no guarantee. No matter how good the narrative is, there's no guarantee that means that it's going to increase in value. Buyers have to line up and send the money, and that's what we take care of watching, is where's the cash flowing, and that's the narrative you need to follow, not the story, because no matter how great the story is, doesn't always have any follow through at all in the share values.
So we know that Ford and GM have both ramped up their EV manufacturing, and they're gonna pump out a lot of vehicles this year, and they're gonna lose about $10,000 per vehicle. That's a good business decision.
That sounds good, yeah.
So profitable. They're not going away from the fossil fuel stuff because that's how they stay in business. And, they're not the only ones. I mean, Volkswagen and Volvo, they're all manufacturing EVs and increasing their production because the governments are incentivizing that work. I don't know what Volkswagen is going to do because they've said they were abandoning, I think this year, all their gasoline vehicles, and they're going to be 100% electric. You can't do that if you're losing money on all of them. But you turn around and take a look at the Lightning, which is Ford's F-150 electric truck, with all the bells and whistles is almost $100,000.
Right.
Okay. Well, I hope they aren't losing 10 grand on that one. Yeah. but they're going to make their money on diesels and gasoline cars, but they gave up the mid-sized cars. Those have been surrendered to Japan and other Asian manufacturers. They just don't sell them anymore. And it's because electric is kind of overtaking that marketplace.
It's a big shift.
But
it's a big shift.
Yeah, but we can't mine any of this stuff in the United States because the EPA won't issue a permit. We have a large lithium field. It's in Nevada. If you could get an EPA permit, it'd probably be 10 years before you got permission to actually start mining it. But before you got there, it's on Indian territory. It's an Indian reservation. I don't think they're going to let you dig up their land. The copper production, and if you're building batteries and you need a transmission system to get the power from your solar and wind farm to your home, we need a different transmission system that we don't have enough copper. Well, big copper mine in South America, the workers are on strike. They don't like, the government is in turmoil. There's some significant problems in making this transition viable.
A lot of issues, and it's going to take a while. It's not going to be fast as some people hope. It's going to be a long haul, and it's definitely not going to be a straight line. We are up against our final break of the morning here. I'd like to remind everyone our next market update webinar is set for Saturday, March 4th, 8:30 in the morning, and you can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this morning, we've got plenty of time left. Full segment, get your call on the board. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
If you say that. Well, that is the question that we ask every day. You look
sometimes
at the market
three or four times a day. Yeah.
And Friday was one of those. You said, my goodness, it looks like nobody knows what they're going to do today.
Not a bit.
Market was green, then it was red, it was green, and it was red, and part of it was green, and part of it was red. It was a day of confusion. Some of that generates from bad advice that people get on social media. Social media is what generated the meme investing that ran up the Bed Bath & Beyond stock price out of bankruptcy, avoiding bankruptcy last year, and AMC and a few other companies that retail investors using a social media driver ganged up on these companies. Well, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, because if you're getting your investment advice on social media, I would suggest you spend a lot of time praying before you act on it, because you really need some heavenly insight. Most of that advice, if it's not just plain outright wrong, may be totally unsuitable for your personal financial situation. And who's acting as the counterbalance for you on that?
Right. It's important to remember that all of that social media information that you're getting, while it seems like it is very personal communications, you and the other person that's giving the advice, it's completely anonymous. You don't even really know who it is that's giving advice, let alone why should you take it. And so, you know, we always make sure people, we tell anyone who asks, you know, you really have to be careful with the information you get online, because like you said, Don, sometimes it's just completely wrong, and they'll have reams of information about why they're right, but that doesn't mean it's true. And so you really need to take care, because there is no shortage of it. There's tons of it out there. In fact, you know, any position you want to take, there's somebody out there that's going to tell you that's a good idea, you should do that. And it's just not true. That's the problem.
Well, I had a call this last week, and from somebody who had just incidentally run into some of our clients, and they called and said, I think I want to know more about you. And I said, well, have you watched any of our videos? You listen to our radio show? No, no. I said, well, you know, we really don't want to talk until you've done some research on us. And our videos are not sales pitches. They're not a come on, let's get this thing done. I mean, you're going to be broke if you don't buy this right away. It's none of that.
Hey, yeah.
They are educational, and you need to go back and watch at least three, and I'd recommend you watch a year's worth. Take some time and get educated about what's going on in the market and some basic principles, and that's what our webinars are designed to do. They're not a come-on pitch. They have a free offer, and that is if you have a portfolio and you would like to have a different view of that portfolio from our perspective, that's a freebie. And we offer, well, that's a standing offer right now. If you want to do that, all we need to do is send us an email and give us your contact. You'll have your email address, but give us your phone number so we can talk to you and give us the tickers that you're invested in. And we'll put together analysis and we'll be glad to discuss why we look at them that way. And you decide what you want to do with that stuff. But social media is not generally the place that you're going to get solid financial advice. It might be there, but you really need to have your own process, your own plan for checking, verifying what's going on. The prior year, not last year, where we had clearly had a bear market, but the year before, coming out of COVID, we had a parabolic run up in the market, and a lot of young people with no prior experience jumped into the market, bought a lot of stocks. They were making money. They were leveraging. They were borrowing money against their portfolios, sometimes against other assets to expand their returns. There was a young man in Las Vegas, 25-year-old Omar Gias, I guess is his last name. I mean, he started out with very little, ended up with $1.5 million trading stocks using just gobs of leverage. Well, you know, that doesn't last.
It never ends well. But people like that, that's who ends up online telling you, you're missing the boat. This is really easy. I'm rich now, and you can do this too. Here's how you do it. Not understanding that they were taking a tremendous amount of risk and on a path that's heading right straight into a brick wall, but they didn't know it because they're not experienced in investing, and they didn't know that they were really doing this wrong. All they knew was they hit a big winner, and so let's get online real quick and tell everybody, hey, this is simple. Everyone should be doing this.
Well, and as he said online, I started with nothing. Here I've got $1.5 million, but he also put $300,000 on credit cards, Super Bowl trips, renting Lamborghinis, sports betting. And when that comes crashing down, yeah, that's a big crash because he probably didn't have any allowance for the tax liability that he'd probably built up along the way. And you still have the tax to pay in 1 year if the losses occur in the next year. I mean, you have some real management problems.
Yeah, and by the way, that $300,000 credit card bill, the bills are still coming. So
yeah, that's still coming.
They're
that's
not going
right.
to go away because you lost the money. The bills are still coming. So you still get to pay that back. Whether you got it or not. So not a nice ending there.
So then there's the TV stuff. There's a writer, William Cohen, wrote a profile of Jim Cramer for The Spectator, in which he dug into the numbers for Cramer's stock picks. And a quote, "The more I spent time on it, the more I realized," subquote, "holy cow. This guy has thousands of calls each month." I'm just highlighting the ones he got right and the ones he got wrong. More often than not, he hits some rock. So, I mean, he makes tons of recommendations. I have a former client. He's deceased now. And when he had his serious stroke, his wife called me and said, he's in the hospital and wants to meet with us. So I did. I went down there. And we took over his primary accounts, and I said, "Well, now I know from our prior contacts, you both of you had IRAs." And his wife's in the room, and he's shaking his head; he doesn't want to talk about it. I said, so, you know, we need to do something with the IRAs. I mean, if you don't survive here, we need to get these straightened out. And he said, there's nothing left. How'd that happen? Because I know he, between the two, I mean, he had $500,000. He says, there's nothing left. Whoa. He says, I've been following Jim Cramer. Ouch. I mean, you get a hot idea. It's like investing in lithium. The demand is huge.
Story's great.
Story's great. And you're down 29% since last December. So where do you draw the line? Just because somebody has a great story doesn't mean the stock is worth squat. Maybe it is
right.
That
and
day.
It's very important to make sure you're not confusing investment advice with investment entertainment. And Cramer is very entertaining. He's been on the air a long time. He's got a lot of viewers. But that doesn't mean his recommendations are very good anyway, especially if he's making thousands of recommendations a month. You know, some of those may work out. A lot of them aren't going to. And you can bet he's not going to go back and go over the bad news with you. You know, that's going to be just in the rearview mirror, and we're going to keep moving ahead. So that needs to go into the entertainment file and not the investing file for decision making. That's just not a good place to get that information.
So the guy, this Cramer tracker guy, basically looked between 2017 and 2021 and said that Cramer, you know, he had some winners and he had some losers. He basically underperformed the market by about 6 percentage points, which isn't all that bad. But it's not what you would assume if you're just listening to the show once in a while. We're right. Coming up on the end of the show. You want to talk to us during the week? We have a toll-free number, 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. Get our week in review by sending us an email, help@iriradio.com. We need your first and last name in the body of the email so we can add you to the distribution list. We are out of time. You have a good week ahead. God bless you, your family, and the United States of America. And Lord willing, we'll be back next Saturday.